bit of breaking news on the COVID-19 front last night as it was revealed that three members of the White House coronavirus task force have placed themselves into quarantine after coming in contact with someone who tested positive for COVID-19. Whether or not that is a member of the vice president's staff, who it was revealed a couple of days ago tested positive, or whether or not it was the valet for the president who tested positive. We're not sure who has come in contact with whom, but we now have Dr. Anthony Fauci, who has placed himself under quarantine. We have now Dr. Robert Redfield, who is the director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, under quarantine, and also the commissioner for the Food and Drug Administration, Stephen Hahn, who has placed himself under quarantine. So, you know, what does this mean exactly? What kind of danger are people in? What kind of potential danger might you be in if you come in contact with somebody who has tested positive or maybe asymptomatic and not even been tested but still spread virus to you? Joining us on the line is Dr. Robert Murphy, who's an epidemiologist at Northwestern University. And Dr. Murphy, welcome. Nice to have you on with us today.
Good morning.
So what do you make of all of this? I mean, with all of the warnings that we've had of protection and social distancing and masks, that the very people who are, you know, disseminating all this information to us every day are now in quarantine.
Well, that's because they were not following their own advice or the advice of the Centers for Disease Control, which is a part of them, of course. Dr. Redfield is the director of that, and he's under quarantine, as you can see. But if you've watched the press conferences, if you've seen them in public, they're in public all the time. Very few of those people were wearing masks. This whole thing could have been averted if they had been listening to their own advice.
And, you know, yet we see the president, we see the vice president, we see all of the experts, all of the speakers, none of them exercising the proper social distancing. Many people have noted since these press conferences have begun how they're all crowded, you know, literally shoulder to shoulder with each other, all speaking into the same microphone, same podium. You know, same thing, and this is happening at a lot of different press conferences. But does that put everybody who is up there in danger? Why do you suppose Absolutely. That these three people have put themselves into quarantine when possibly all of the other people who we see standing up at the podium, including the president and vice president?
Let me ask you, what on the for the task force, which has spent a lot of time together, what distinguishes the three people who put themselves in quarantine? I'll answer the question. They're all expert medical doctors.
Yeah.
They know what the risk is. The rest of them are still on some delusional plane that this thing is just not going to hit them and that they're above the laws of viral transmission. And you know, hopefully they'll get some sense now and start following the rules that they are promoting.
So what kind of danger might Dr. Fauci, Dr. Redfield, and Stephen Hahn actually be in right now?
They're in a lot of danger. This thing is more contagious than we thought. They know it. They've been trying to do the right thing, so to speak. However, the task force is loaded with people that have no medical background or training, and they just don't believe it's going to affect them. It's the same thing with testing. You know, they're saying, oh, we have enough tests. Well, everybody knows that we don't have enough tests. Every expert in the country says there's still not enough tests, even though things have improved. However, they're testing themselves every day. Every day. It's still a little bit hard to get a test around here, although it's much easier. You know, so, you know, what is the giant disconnect here? In that, you know, everyone should be on the same page. This virus doesn't care about your political persuasion. It doesn't care about your age. It doesn't care about your race. It just wants to infect human beings. And as soon as everybody understands that, I think we can, you know, move forward, but including this task force.
Yeah, it's very interesting to me when I see, when I see people in the grocery store without masks, not practicing social distancing, not doing anything that's been advised by scientists and medical experts, because they think they know better. And I see even some of our texts that are coming in saying masks don't work. You know, it's a political conspiracy. I mean, they're, you know, now it's become that. And that's actually kind of dangerous, isn't it?
It's very dangerous. It's incredibly dangerous. And unfortunately, like the task force, they're going to learn the hard way because they're going to get infected. But remember, the mask controversy is that there's a misunderstanding about what the mask does. The mask actually does not protect you wearing the mask. It protects you, the infected one, from spreading the virus.
Yeah.
That's the only reason why we're wearing these bandanas these days. These are not medical masks. They don't filter hardly anything. However, they keep the respiratory droplets, you know, into the mask and not into the environment.
Yeah.
And that's what's saving all of us. And that's what's saving everybody everywhere around the world, except for here. I mean, people, you know, there is an ordinance on the book that you, if you go into a public place, a public building, a grocery store, a pharmacy, whatever, you're supposed to be wearing a mask. And some places are doing it. Some places are a little lax. But these stores need to strictly enforce that and not let people in that are not wearing masks. And they need to have people, the employees of the store, interrupt people who are not practicing the social distancing. They can't let everybody in at the same time. You know, things have got to be less dense. But if we don't do that, this whole thing is hopeless.
Yeah, I've been to stores where they're very strict about how many people they're letting in the stores. And I've been to stores where even the employees are, if they have masks on, they have them down around their chins, down around their necks, up on their foreheads. I mean, even the employees aren't, taking it seriously or don't understand the kind of danger that they're putting in. But the bottom line, I mean, this is just a shining example, isn't it, that if these two staff members of the task force had been wearing masks, it would have been a lot less likely that anything would have been spread among those people standing at the podium who are
absolutely
also not wearing masks.
The other thing with the podium thing is the microphones are, you know, have stainless steel and plastic on them, and the virus can live there for at least hours, if not days. Do you see them cleaning the microphone between people? No.
Right.
You know, people go one right after the other talking, and you can almost see some of the respiratory droplets in some of these people, and everything they touch with their hands. They're basically breaking all the public health rules that actually they have put in place themselves.
Someone on our text line asking, I think, a really good question. How long can I use my mask? If I go into a store and encounter 25 people, can I reuse it another day?
Yeah, you can reuse it. You have to consider that the outside of the mask may be contaminated. Now, that contamination, especially on cloth, does not last very long. Like within a day or two, nothing could be infectious. So you can reuse the mask. You can also wash the mask. You can spray it with disinfectant. You can wash it with soap and water. There's ways to sterilize those masks. Fortunately, with this virus, it's very easy to deactivate. It's very easy to kill the virus. Just soap and water works fine.
Yeah. So, bandana, cloth mask, something like that, certainly easier to wash than some of these surgical masks that are a kind of paper, paper-like.
You can't wash the surgical mask, but there's other things you can do with them, but only in a hospital. You can sterilize them in an autoclave. You can spray aerosolized hydrogen peroxide. I mean, there's a variety of things you can do to even reuse those things, although they're designed for one-time use.
Yeah.
So in a way, for the public, the bandana is probably the best approach.
Very interesting. 312-981-7200 if you have questions for Dr. Murphy. 1146, Dr. Robert Murphy, epidemiologist at Northwestern University, is on the line to answer questions. So, Dr. Murphy, as it pertains to Dr. Fauci, Dr. Redfield, and Stephen Hahn on the coronavirus task force that have put themselves into quarantine now, how can we take lessons from them and apply them to our daily lives so we don't wind up in situations like that?
Well, they're doing the right thing. And they're doing what the current national and state guidelines are recommending. That if you come in contact with somebody who has documented COVID-19, you should go into quarantine for 14 days.
And do you take any treatment? Do you do anything? Are you waiting to see if you wind up with any symptoms in those 14 days?
Right. And then if you develop any symptoms in those 14 days, then you yourself get tested and go about, you know, then you take it from there.
But to eliminate the possibility that you may wind up exposed to somebody, masks and gloves, right? I mean, that's just what to repeat what everybody has been saying for weeks and weeks.
Exactly. It's been estimated that if everybody followed the guidelines, this is worldwide, by the way, and you wore a mask when you're outside, and when you go inside, you put on some gloves, disposable gloves, and you wear your mask in any public building, store, whatever, that basically this whole COVID-19 epidemic would shut down.
Here's Katie at 312-981-7200. Katie, hi, you're on WGN.
Good morning. Question for the doctor. Have a nephew living with grandma, grandpa, and brother-in-law. Nephew and mother-in-law last week tested positive. Brother-in-law and father-in-law, one works in heating and air conditioning, the other one works in a factory, are still going to work every day. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't get it through them to self-quarantine. What is there any recourse? You know, I just feel like they're spreading this virus.
They could be. And it depends actually on their work situation. Are they wearing masks? Can I ask you a question? Are they wearing masks when they go to work?
I am unaware of that. I don't know. I what's the employer's stance on this, I would think?
Well, I mean, there are guidelines in place, and they are not following the guidelines. Now,
okay.
Is anybody going to do anything about it? I doubt it. But I think as a concerned member of the public, you should inform the employer and the Illinois Department of Public Health. That I can guarantee they're going to do anything about it. But I think you should make, you know, people have to start complaining. If we don't complain, nothing will change.
Thank you. It's caused, you know, a little animosity among the family. I did give them they live in Cook County, the Cook County Health Department phone number, and the CDC guidelines, and urged them to follow them. But it's tough. It's a tough situation.
it is. And this sort of follows, you know, this political divide, which is now happening with all of this, of some people saying, you know, I have a right to go to work. I have a right to earn my living. Except if you're exposed to people who have tested positive, you very selfishly now could be passing, you could have also be positive, but be passing that to other people out of, you know, your quote, your right to go to work. It's a very selfish thing to do, not caring about other people.
Absolutely. Right. And there's many other situations. When you get in your car, do you put on your seatbelt? Right. When you are on the highway, because do you think it's your right to travel 120 miles an hour? No, no, that's not your right. And it's not your right during an epidemic, during a pandemic, to go out and potentially expose other people.
Yeah, I've been comparing it to...
We're trying to do this voluntarily at this point, but if things don't get better, and Illinois does not look good, by the way, For some reason, the case numbers are not coming down. And I think it's because of situations just like you explained.
Yeah. I've been comparing it to drunk driving, you know, where people, feel like I can drive, I can go have a few drinks and not be drunk. But you might hit somebody, you know. I guess you do have the right to be as drunk as you want to be, but when you get in the car,
the public has a right not to get infected.
Here's Doug on the phone line at 312-981-7200.
Hey, Dean. First of all, you're the reason I listen to WG and keep up the good work.
Thank you.
I got two questions for the doctor. One is I've read that the normal flu vaccine is about 50% effective. And that surveys have shown that when the vaccine does come, maybe only 50% of the people are willing to take it. So, first of all, will that require that the vaccine be mandated across the country, that everybody has to have it? And even if you take it, then what is your percent of it being effective on you?
These are really great questions. We actually have the answer for them. We haven't really imposed flu vaccine on a population-based level. However, different workplaces, such as daycare centers, hospitals, urgent care places, anywhere where there's healthcare providers or there's people who are really at high risk, nursing homes, daycare, like I said, those employees are mandated by the state to actually have the flu vaccine unless there's some medical reason why they can't take it. So there are places within society where it is mandated. It hasn't gone any further than that. You know, this is where the individual rights versus public health come into play. And, you know, people feel very strongly about that. But obviously that would be the best approach. Now, if there's a coronavirus vaccine, this debate will come up. I think a lot of people are going to want to take it. And certainly all the healthcare providers and other people at risk and first-line responders are going to want to take it. I don't think there's going to be a big pushback. But in some parts of the population, there may be. And it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out.
Doug, thank you very much for the call. And let's go to Tom in Wheaton next. You are on WGN, Tom.
Good morning, gentlemen. I go to work every day. I'm an essential worker. And we are now screening for temperatures every morning. We have been for about 3 weeks. And the list of questions that everybody's heard, you know, do you feel sick, a fever? And then one of the other questions is, do you know anyone that may have been positive for COVID? And I don't know the real answer to that question, because through rumors in our facility and, you know, the way people talk, it's like, oh, so-and-so has it. He hasn't been to work for 8, 9, 10 days, or his wife has it. I may have been in contact with that person, but through HIPAA laws and all those other things, I don't really know the correct answer to that question. If I say yes, I may be sent home and self-quarantined. And if I say no, it's like, well, you know what, maybe I'm not telling the truth. And it just concerns me. And I've asked our HR department, and I have not gotten an answer.
Yeah, it's an interesting question, because there are privacy issues also, aren't there, with people who test positive?
Absolutely, but in a public health emergency, some of those privacy issues are waived. Now, in your situation, which is incredibly common, we lack actually the legal basis to force the companies to really deal with the situation rationally. Sounds like your company is not. But, you know, ideally, the companies should be informing everybody about who was infected, and then who was around them needs to at least have the test done. One of the big issues here, it's not so much the people with the fever. If you come in with a fever, you have a very high chance of having COVID-19. But it's the 15 to 20% of people who don't have a fever. That's the ones who are spreading the virus around the companies, the essential businesses at this time, and through the community. So this has got to be really tightened up. And it may be the reason, what the situation you just described, may be the reason why the Illinois numbers are not moving in the right direction.
Well,
Tom, good luck with that. Thank you very much for your call. Dr. Murphy, earlier we were talking about this at the beginning of the show with Dr. Kevin Most, and I had mentioned that I had figured out a way finally to wear my surgical mask without fogging up my glasses, and our text line went crazy. You would have thought that I had come up with the cure for the common cold. Because obviously a lot of people, you wear glasses, I wear glasses,
yes.
You know, and it's kind of a deal when you're wearing these masks, it does fog up your glasses, but the surgical masks that I've had have that little metal band on the top. You need to pinch that around the top of your nose and try to cut off as much air coming up from the mask as possible. So I do that pinching around the top of my nose. I scoop my glasses down a little bit, so whatever air may be coming up is going above the glasses and not onto the glasses. But then people start texting in saying that I need to clean my glasses with shaving cream, and that's some kind of miracle thing to keep the fog off the glasses. What's your solution to this?
Well, as you know, I wear glasses. And it's a big issue, but I have found a mask that I bought locally that actually has that band on the top of it, even though it's not a surgical mask, it's a cloth one. That actually is the thing that helps the most, and also having the glasses, as you mentioned, down over the top of the mask really helps quite a bit. So everybody has to kind of just figure this out. There's been articles written about this, and you've discussed some of the good ones. Hey, whatever works, try it and see how it works.
Yeah, you gotta do a little trial and error. I have found that metal band, mask up a little higher than you would think, and glasses down a little lower than you think, seems to work best for me. But I'm going to be doing some clinical trials today with the shaving cream. I'm going to be conducting experiments at my home today with the Barbasol shaving cream.
Now, remember to do a controlled trial. So do it on one side and not the other.
Yeah. Oh.
So you can compare.
See, this is what I get for mentioning it to an epidemiologist to make sure my science is good on this.
Right.
Dr. Robert Murphy, epidemiologist, Northwestern. Always a pleasure to talk to you. Look forward to seeing you every morning in the 7 o'clock hour on the WGN TV morning news. Thank you, Doctor. Appreciate the info.
Great. Thank you for inviting me, and thank you for these really great questions and for the good work you're doing.